As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today on the show, we welcome Blair Reeves, who's a product manager at SAS and the coming author of Building for Business. We talked to Blair specifically about enterprise product management, some of the tips and techniques, and even the differences that he's seen in his 15 plus years working in product. It's a great interview for anyone working in product, but especially if you're leading a larger team. So stay tuned. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
Right. Blair, welcome to the show. Excited to have you on here to talk about enterprise product management. Why don't you give me just a quick background on your career working in product.
Sure. Thanks for having me on too. So my name is Blair Reeves. I'm a principal product manager here at SAS Software. We're a very large data analytics and data management provider based in Raleigh, North Carolina. I've been working in enterprise software, not only in product management, though for the last several years in product management for a number of years. First at IBM. Then at Demandware, which later became the Salesforce Commerce Cloud, and now it's SAS. And so before that, I held some roles in product marketing, some cross-functional projects like that. And that's really how I got into technology. Before that, I was at business school, and I actually worked in international aid. Well, but before that, so I'm like an expat here in And so now I'm I own a product here at SAS that that is our first native enterprise SAS product at our company. Now, one issue we run into sometimes, our company is called SAS, S-A-S, and we refer to SAS as our company, but also enterprise SAS, software as a service. So occasionally that can get a little confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, today we want to dig into how enterprise product management may differ from what we often talk about, startup and smaller company product management.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of ways in which product management really, the nature of the function changes as you get larger as an organization. So, you know, a lot of smaller companies, you know, may not even have a product management function, right? I mean, if you're a small startup, you know, you're lead developer or CTO or even the CEO may effectively be the product manager. You know, if you're still searching for product market fit, for example, or if you know, if you're reaching a particular audience in which, you know, the customer feedback isn't necessarily as important as maybe market feedback, right? That those are situations in which, you know, the product management function might be slower to form at a company. And what we're seeing, of course, now in, you know, enterprise software as a service, enterprise SaaS, is that, you know, product management has become sort of the de facto, you know, default function for guiding product development, planning, design, and so forth. That's really been a big change over the last like 15 years or so, ever since like the first, you know, web 2.0, you know, boom kicked off. You know, one thing, you know, people talk about this a lot, how, you know, Google and Facebook, actually their gargantuan mega growth cycle resulted in this great, you know, proliferation of product people and product mindset throughout the tech industry that has affected us all. Mm.
And so when you mentioned kind of market versus customer validation, mm-hmm. talk to me about how you are on your daily pulling in those validation pieces.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, a big part of product management, of course, is gathering customer input. That is easier for someone in a consumer business, for example, or it often is, right? So, for example, like if you are a product manager at Facebook, right, you can A-B test, and they do A-B-C-D-E-N, you know, test everything constantly, right? So if you're Google, you can, you know, and they famously do this, they test, you know, multiple shades of green in their logo, and they turn that on for an hour, and they have a few million data points, right? And so some of the testing in that space, lots of really interesting stuff. Most of it is impossible in enterprise software. I don't want to say impossible. It depends on the kind of product and where you are, but that's very, very difficult to do. Not only because...
I just want to clarify, the reason is because you're not working with the same volume to get, you know, unbiased enough data points to get unbiased results.
Well, that's one reason. Yeah. So usually, I mean, we have, in a very successful enterprise software product, might have several dozen customers, might have, you know, could have hundreds, you know, if you're a very large platform, like, you know, like Salesforce or Adobe or one of these, they have, you know, tens of thousands of customers on their platform. And then, you know, many, many more users below those customers. Another very successful product might have several dozen customers, right? And those customers are paying you a lot more money. So that's one reason, right? So testing, you know, is going to vary, you know, greatly depending on what industry those customers are in. Use of your tool that they're using. But the other big part of this, of course, is that they're customers, they're paying you money, right? So you change you change something in their UI or in their interface, you know, enterprise customers don't like that. you get some nasty grams when, a toolbar is different or a drop-down menu is different, or, you know, they don't like being guinea pigs. And there are still ways you can do it, but it's more of an opt-in process. So it's a lot harder to get that kind of instant testing feedback than it is in like a consumer business.
And so what methods do you use, right, in addition to some of the data collection in order to validate either your ideas or what you guys have already built and put out there?
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple ways of doing this. There's a lot. I mean, there's inevitably a large judgment aspect to this, right? But you know, we always want to bring as much data as we can into the process. So there's a lot of different ways that we go about collecting customer input and customer intelligence. So one of those, of course, the easiest way is go to a customer and ask what they want, or ask about how they're using your product, how they're using their tool. To ask about their jobs, right? So, customer visits are gold. You go to a customer, interview whoever you can, understand the business they're in, right? So if they're using your tool and they're, in a retail industry, they're going to use your product probably quite differently than someone in the travel industry or insurance or a financial services provider or, what have you. So, you can do job shadowing. There are, direct interviews. Just watching someone use your tool is really key in a kind of a user testing kind of way. There are all kinds of, product management is full of these like fun games you can play when you go visit a customer. So, one thing I like to do is you bring like $100 of Monopoly money.
Okay.
You give it out to like, five different users of your product and you lay out, five or six different kind of feature areas that you would like to work on in your roadmap. You say, well, look, buy a feature. If you had, to allocate, your Monopoly money across a couple of features, where would you spend that money? And, it's really interesting to see what features users are quote unquote buying with their Monopoly money. Right. And some of that's kind of a lot of fun. But the other thing here is, you can't possibly visit all your customers. It's really hard to get customers that want to spend time with you sometimes. And so, sometimes you can do that. When you can't, you have to talk with your sellers because, of course, your sales force are the ones who are spending all their day talking to prospects, talking to your customers, talking to the market. And there are lots of different ways as enterprise product managers, we have to kind of download, the insights that our sales force is bringing back to, back into our house. And you have to interrogate that too. I mean, sometimes sellers have a correct perspective. Sometimes they have a perspective that's a little, a little strange or a little out there. Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're wrong. They're human. And so figuring out a good way of parsing all that, input, that's a big part of what we do.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Now, back to the show.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. So when you look at the team and kind of the day-to-day of product management within an enterprise organization. What differences do you see between, you know, a mid or large company versus this enterprise space, or maybe a lot of, there's a lot of overlap?
There are a number of differences. So, you know, one of the more eye-opening things I ever did was I worked at Demandware when we were really a growth stage firm. So we were, you know, we were making money hand over fist, you know, deals were coming in. It was great. In our like large enterprise, you know, segment that we were trying to sell into, you know, the really, really big retailers, you know, that was kind of an uphill battle for us. And we were very successful at it. But, you know, what a lot of smaller and mid-sized companies consider their, you know, big, big, big accounts, those are the folks that IBM, Oracle, Microsoft, you know, those guys, you know, that's like their typical deal, you know? So, you know, like a small, like for a very large enterprise software vendor, their SMB kind of segment might be, you know, a smaller mid-sized company's big, big tier. Right. And a lot of that just has to do with your sales strategy. I mean, you know, you go to any airport and all the technology vendors whose like ads are everywhere, you know, they're the ones who are selling to these, you know, gigantic multinational corporations who do have a large budget to spend on software. But how you sell into those companies is quite different than how you sell into like a smaller company, and it relies more on, you know, brand level marketing, solution level marketing, long-term, you know, sales engagements, and relationships. And that's what makes the big guys really successful. And it's very time consuming and can be very expensive for smaller companies to replicate.
Do you think about the product differently when you're, you know, when your clients are enterprise level versus kind of SMBs?
I think so, yeah. You know, a lot of times a very large, you know, enterprise client is going to have a relationship with your vendor as like a company to company relationship rather than, a product relationship. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have, you know, Big Bank X, right? Big Bank X is an IBM account, or they're an Oracle account, or they're a Salesforce account or whatever. And they probably don't just buy one product from that company. They probably buy a lot of products from that company. And, you know, those are negotiated in these gigantic, you know, messy Frankenstein deals that involve a lot of money changing hands. And, you know, when that bank looks at a smaller vendor, you know, they're buying a product from that company, but they don't really see them as a peer. And that changes the relationship quite a bit. And it doesn't mean it can't be navigated. It's just a very different, again, a very different sales process and how you negotiate that relationship. Certainly from a sales perspective, but also from a product perspective and a leadership perspective, is quite different.
Do you like, when you're working with Big Bank X, oftentimes we hear in enterprise software, there's a lot of customization because they have very specific processes. They have very specific software that they need to integrate with.
Yeah.
And you need to manage that, right? As a product manager, you know, can you shed some insight on how that's done and how you look at these custom requests?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So an enterprise SaaS, and you know, on-premise world was quite similar, but even in the SaaS world, you know, a sales cycle easily 6 to 12 months, right? And then you when you get into a very large company who may have extensive customization requirements and so forth, banks of course are famous for that, but you know, lots of companies do it. That could be a 12-month, 18-month implementation cycle, longer if you're talking about training and solution training and stuff like that, which can be good, right? I mean, that's, it can be all profitable services and whatever else, but it's just a longer process. And it's a process you have to prepare for. So as a product manager, one of the things, you know, you learn as a product manager especially for like a large enterprise SaaS platform is that sometimes your customers, you know, no two implementations are correct. So are the same. Hopefully they're correct.
And
you know, when they're not the same, you know, your customers can teach you things about your own product. You know, especially if you have, you know, you're customizing all kinds of variables and all kinds of, you know, setups and whatever, your customers can come to you with requests that are downright arcane. You know, as a product manager, you should understand your product, of course, but you know, it is not infrequent that, you know, our customers are teaching us stuff. And that's a also a really valuable, you know, line of input, but it's something that a customer, a product manager has to learn, to keep an open line of communication with the community of users around her, his product. And that's one reason, one channel for, you know, understanding your product better, but also understanding your market and customer better.
How involved are you in those conversations with the sales team as, you know, during that? 9 to 16 month process of putting the deal together?
Yeah, this is one of the key differences between enterprise product management and consumer facing product management is that you know, every product manager in enterprise software interacts with sales, and if you don't, I mean, maybe there are exceptions, I don't know, I've never seen any. Okay. You know, like, we're not account managers, so we can't be in the weeds helping every deal get customized, of course. But you know, we know what deals are in the pipeline. We know who's in the process of implementation right now. We know what that implementation cycle is like. A lot of you know, enterprise PMs I know have implemented their product before, at least in an elementary way, and it really gives you insight into how, I don't say how painful that process can be, but you know, how complicated it can be. You know, and so, you know, we have a sales and marketing team that we are accountable to and we have to help support. And, you know, every PM should be talking with our sales and marketing colleagues, if not daily, then at least on a very, very, very regular cadence. And that's one big difference, because in the consumer world, most consumer PMs I know never interact with anyone from sales until they're at a very, very senior level. Because, of course, you know, maybe sales isn't even talking to their users at all. Maybe they're they have sales teams and an ad team or something like that, which is a completely different dynamic that affects how you plan, build, and design your product.
How much control over saying yes or no do you have in those negotiations? Is there a lot of pushback from the product team? I know there is in consumer world. In the SaaS world, is it more like, let's figure out how to get this done? Or are there things that you say no to?
Oh, sure. I mean, half of the product manager's job is saying no, right? Okay. And, you know, because you know, there's, you know, every customer you know, wants what they want. And, you know, and this is also like a difference, right? If a customer is, you know, is on the hook for a very, very, very large deal, you know, at the end of the day, our job is to sell software, right? So, yeah, I mean, let's kick that out of the roadmap and go do what they want to do, right? But that's also a judgment thing, right? I mean, if, you know, it's going to depend. Is this valuable to other customers? If it is, all the better. If it's not, you know, there's a weighing of cost and benefit there. But, you know, that's the thing. I mean, is it worth it to us as a company? Is it worth it from us as from a development perspective about, you know, around the resources we have to deploy? And that's a discussion where we bring in our development leaders and talk with them. Because, you know, every salesperson comes into our office and says, look, we can clinch the deal if you just do X, right? And what we've learned is that sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. And the sales guy just wants to get the contract signed and say, we'll do this. And so that's it's something you have to learn about your team and also about the customers you're dealing with.
What could product managers at smaller organizations or even consumer facing organizations learn from an enterprise product manager?
So you mean at a smaller company, learn about, you know, doing product management in a larger company?
Or, you know, what could, are there any processes or organizational techniques that you do at the enterprise level that could also be implemented and maybe helpful to someone managing a smaller team or a smaller product?
Oh, sure. Yeah. One of the hardest things, famously, right, for large companies to do is to align themselves around a goal. And there are lots of ways in which smart product managers can do this, and even in large organizations. You know, in our book that I'll talk about in a minute, we have a product leadership team model that we kind of break down. And this is an approach that's used in a lot of really high functioning enterprise SaaS, sort of vendors. But, it's basically a way to align, all kind of the principles in the product design process, leadership, product, engineering, and marketing and sales around, a set number of goals, and then kind of figuring out how we, what are the milestones to achieve those, product goals for the year. We can leave those kind of decisions up to, product and development to hash out and figure out, the details. But once everyone's aligned around what those goals are and how we stay accountable to them, that's really the really big key step to change the discussion from, what and how we're going to do this to a discussion around, when and what steps, which are is much more productive kind of setup. So you can do that in a smaller organization because, even small companies frequently have issues around aligning everyone around the right goals. Big companies have a big problem with aligning, deciding what those goals are and then staying accountable to them. And I think that smaller companies can actually have an advantage in doing that and in deciding, here's what we're going to do with the product this year. We can always remain flexible, but here's our idea and let's go do this. And when you're a company of 50 people, it's a little bit easier to do that than when you're a company of 100,000 people.
Yeah. And Have you worked in both where have you brought this into an organization, this kind of accountability? What have the effects been?
So yeah, the product leadership team is both an organizational and a kind of almost a cultural change for some companies. A lot of larger companies that have been around for a while and have moved to an agile model, for example, for delivering software, or have moved to software as a service as a delivery model. That's really painful and can be a really traumatic move for some of these people. And so using that as an opportunity to instill a new way of keeping everyone aligned is really great because, in the bad old days, right, your roadmap might be 3 years long. I know people who are, the on-premise software world is still alive and kicking, by the way. And I know people working in it, and they're planning their roadmaps for 2021, 2022, 2023. And that world is not going away. It's not growing very fast, but it's out there. So staying accountable to those goals doesn't require the kind of, high-touch accountability that, enterprise SaaS requires, right? Making sure people understand that when you move to software as a service or you move to Agile, that is not just like a new way of, delivering software or making software. It also has a lot of organizational, knock-on effects that you have to plan for and adapt to, or you're not going to be very successful with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm planning my roadmap for March 7th right now.
So you're doing it the right way.
I guess. I don't know. It would be nice. I can't even wrap my head at this point around 2021. But I respect those that kind of foresight within the product to get there.
Well, it's one of the replacement cycle of your software license is years long, right? I mean, those are the kinds of, right. Ripping it out and replacing it with a new version or a new upgrade or whatever is a implementation cycle of 18 months. I mean, those are the kinds of timelines you have to think about. And it's not a world I've worked a lot in. I've always been in enterprise SaaS, but I know, people who do it.
Well, tell me about your book, Product Management and Enterprise Software, that's coming out soon in O'Reilly.
Sure.
Where can people find it? What are they going to learn?
So the title is Building Products for the Enterprise. The book website is buildingforbusiness.com. And it's due out early March from O'Reilly Media. So Ben Gaines, my friend at Adobe, and I co-wrote the book, and it's about product management in enterprise software, why it is different, how some best practices for doing it, and some domains of knowledge that we think are really important for enterprise product managers to master. Because we found that a lot of the narrative around product management out there in the market today is heavily focused on startups, heavily focused on consumer businesses, which we didn't find always super useful for us. And I think that there is a community of enterprise software people out there for whom there isn't a whole lot of content right now. And we're hoping to change that.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. And, you know, we look forward to keeping up with you and the release of the book.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it if you would spread the word. And when you can, go to rocketship.fm and scroll all the way down and leave your email with us. We'll let you know about upcoming episodes, but we'll also get you in on a Slack channel with thousands of other product people and all sorts of other good stuff that we know
about rocketship.fm. So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review or tell a friend or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple days.